gave her my love, I gave her my sympathy, I gave her my time, and she flipped that shit on me. Oh, the trust. I gave her attention, I gave her time alone, but all she wanted was just to look at my phone.
Hey everybody, welcome to the 440 Guitar Podcast. I am your host, Jarrell Powell. Thank you so much for tuning up. You can get the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anchor.fm/440. Be sure to follow the podcast as well on Instagram, at the 440 Guitar Podcast, so you can be updated on the episodes for when they release. And if you know of any musicians or artists that maybe would be great for me to speak to, feel free to send me an email at the440podcast@gmail.com, or you can direct message me on Instagram as well. I'd be more than happy to connect the dots, or if you can connect the dots for me to help speak to an artist that you think would be good for me to speak to, feel free to do that. I'd love to have that opportunity. So again, feel free to do that if you'd like to do so. And today I'm very excited to speak with these guests today. A little bit of a different type of episode versus me, you know, interviewing guitarists for the show. But these are folks that are definitely connected when it comes to music and working with musicians and having a really fantastic community that I wanted to be sure to highlight. So the 440 Guitar Podcast is very excited to have Ralph and Jonathan Laguerre on the show. How are you guys doing?
Hey, what's up? Happy to be here, man.
I'm happy to be here. It's an honor to be on the podcast, my first podcast.
Oh, so nice.
Hopefully very this nice. Is a magical moment.
Very nice. For hopefully not the last, right?
Let's see how this one goes.
Oh, man. So before we get started, I mean, what's been keeping you guys busy just recently? I know, Ralph, we were talking off air. You said you had a show yesterday. What's been going on with you guys just in general, just around like the, you know, the previous weeks, or what's been going on recently with you guys?
So, I mean, Knockhouse has a bond offering. So we're officially on Wall Street on the bond side, not on the share side. Oh, so wow. That was like a big project, a lot of accounting, a lot of back end work. You know, that's kind of like my forte when wow. we run it. So, you know, the marketing, we're supposed to have a marketing campaign and probably an event for it. So if you want to check it out, it's called thesmbx.com. You just go on the market. We're the first ones there. I think we were listed on Friday. So I just been working on that for a month. We're trying to raise for a new studio. So we're trying to expand our studio space from that location, make it a couple of locations in and around LA. So it should be very interesting in the next year of seeing where we go from there.
Awesome.
First podcast promo is done, complete. It's done. We're done. That's it. We got all the information. We got all we need.
That's what I was doing. Long just working and, you know, just trying to get some artists in. That's kind of the name of the game right now in LA.
Cool. Right on. What about you, Ralph?
Yeah, just doing comedy shows. Like, yeah, last night was great. I got one coming up on Friday, but it's keeping me busy. A lot of things. A lot. Socks are keeping me busy. I think socks keep a lot of people busy, right? A lot of thoughts. What else is going on that is instrumental to this podcast, right? Music is keeping me busy. I'm working on a couple of tunes, working with like a live band. Would love for you to play some tunes that I'm working on. Sour Jack is live and back in effect, and then comedy is keeping me busy, and just life and work, yeah. And Knockhouse, yeah.
Very cool.
And a podcast, yeah, podcast. I didn't know podcasts keep people busy.
I do like three of them a week, so I know what you mean.
It's just like, like editing conversations, like, but it's a beautiful thing, like conversations and just like getting to know somebody and like exploring how their mind works and how their heart works and just like what are their interests, you know. So it's like I just got back into the podcast game, so it was like really cool to just get back into it. Like it was right. Yeah, right. How about you? What's keeping you busy, man?
Me? Oh man, too many things to talk about. But definitely, for those of you who are familiar with what I do, you know, I also do a video game podcast, the Gamers for Life podcast. that I do with my friend Arthur Thomas. We just did our first video episode in a long time. We were kind of off the grid for a bit, but did our video episode, and that went really well. So that's available, you know, on the streaming stuff and also on the YouTube. Music Buds podcast. I do a music review podcast with three other folks. Two of them, one of them is from Harlem. The other one's from the Bronx. The other one used to be in New York, but now I think is in Atlanta. So very much a kind of a stretched out music podcast reviewing from artists of that people don't usually know. And that's just that. That's not talking about music, but it's a lot keeping busy. So to get started for you guys, so here on the 440 Guitar Podcast, we're really big on origin stories, how people got to where they are today. So to start off, can you guys tell me what your earliest memories of music were, just at the very earliest state? I guess I'll start with you, Ralph.
I could say the earliest stage of music is two instances. Is where we grew up in Randolph, Massachusetts. I remember being taught piano at an early age by an Asian neighbor that just stayed around like a street over, and I would walk to her house sometimes or just get driven, and she would teach me piano and the basics, and I was learning recitals, and just like the records my dad would play in the record player, like there was an actual record player, you know, like it was like the end of the 80s, early 90s, so there were still record players, right? So like, there was unironically, so we were playing like Nat King Cole and like Bob Marley to like Haitian Compa music, so it was just like a lot of music like that growing up. That was like my earliest stage.
Nice. And then did you kind of have this a similar memory of music, Jonathan, or what was kind of your first memory of music?
So yeah, I started with the piano with Ralph too, because you know I wanted to do everything Ralph did, so that was a big brother thing. So I could say there was like a few songs, because you know, so we played piano, you know, I loved it, I guess more than Ralph did, because I wanted to keep learning the piano. But like, I think one song stuck out to me when I was six years old, I guess there was like two songs. Yeah. So the first one was the Fugees, No Woman, No Cry, because it was the 90s. Mm-hmm. So they were playing that. And then the Biggie Smalls, More Money, More Problems. So like, those are the two songs where I was just like, whoa, I love hip hop. You know, that was the time when I was like, okay, this is what it is. And they just got deeper and deeper into like, you know, how much hip hop. And then Ralph obviously had a huge influence on that hip hop culture as well. So yeah, it was definitely, cause I just talked about this the other day, honestly, cause I always ask people like, what was your first song that you think you remember? So if it's not Barney, and then it's not, you know, Disney Channel movies and like, you know, Disney movies, those were the two actual songs that kind of like, you know, started me off in the music genre.
Nice. And then I know, Ralph, I know you mentioned as far as like some of the music that was played in the house via the vinyl player. So was that something that was pretty prominent like throughout childhood, as far as like music in general being played at the house? Like, I know for me, like music would be played when it comes to like certain gospel music that like my parents would like be singing on Sunday, but as far as like music like playing like during dinner or just randomly throughout the day, it didn't really happen. I kind of like stumbled upon like stuff that my brother listened to, but was music normally played in the house growing up?
I'd say like definitely in Boston for sure was like one of those that I remember music being played a lot. And then car rides, there was just like music being played, like in my dad's car was just like Haitian compa music that you were just like, didn't like, you know, that was the radio as a kid, that was just the radio, you just grew up with that music, and then and then your cousins is playing like hip-hop, like my first is If I Rule the World by Nas, like that was like Lauryn Hill, Nas, like Fugees, like those were like growing up hip-hop, but so it was like Haitian and hip-hop. And then like I think when you get older, we moved to like Florida, I mean, music was being played. I don't remember being played around the house like, we got to listen to this music as a family. Yeah. But I feel like it was now time where I was just downloading music.
Yeah.
Like, and just like ruining the house computer. Like, you know what I mean?
LimeWire downloads.
Yeah. Why is this computer broken? I'm like, I don't know.
He has like 50 CDs. All buried. Yeah. I mean, I remember briefly, like, you know, mom used to be like, get up, stand up, for your rights. That's kind of how she woke us up every morning. Oh, like, wow. You know what I'm saying? When we were younger. So like, it was definitely Bob Marley intense, but we grew up in the church too. So can't forget about that. A lot of church music was definitely being played. Kirk Franklin growing up was definitely being played, you know? So we went to the church a lot. So a lot of the, everything we listened to outside of church was the devil's music at one point. So
it's funny how that's always the way, you know, it's like, if it's not playing this church, it's the devil's music. It's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to say, like, you don't know, you know all the lyrics to this rap song, but you don't know the Bible. Like, it is true. I didn't know the Bible, but I knew Biggie Smalls, you know. So.
I knew Ludacris.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to Ludacris, man. Man. God damn.
Oh, man.
Those are good days, man, for real.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting as far as you guys, you know, learning. Or just being sought to learn, you know, piano at an early age. Were your parents like musicians then, or like? I'm curious as far as, you know, the reasoning for both of you guys. Like, oh, like you guys should learn piano. You know, like how was that? How was that in general? Like, do you remember your parents playing music or anything like that?
I remember my dad taking like one or two guitar lessons. Like he would go to this place in Randolph to around the corner, and he had an acoustic guitar, and then it just became like a piece of artifact in our garage, you know. Like he just never played it, but he was interested in playing guitar. I don't know, I feel like maybe he's just like, oh, I have kids, why am I playing guitar, like, or I don't know, like why he stopped. But I remember he playing that, but I don't know if there was like, I can't recall, like, when I was like, oh, you got to play piano because of this. So, yeah. Like, give it. I think it was just something like, oh, you just got to do it. You know, it was cool. I think it was just, like, the pressure of practice. And they're like, you got to practice. You got to practice. You're like, yo, this shit is annoying. Stop telling me to practice. Like, you know what I mean? But the thing is, as a kid, you don't understand the bigger scope of why they're telling you to practice. You know, like, you're just like, yo. Leave me alone, like, you know. But that's what I felt like. I kind of stopped when I moved to Florida. I was like, bro, I do not want to practice anymore. But I was like hitting up recitals in Boston as a kid, wearing tux and doing duets with adults. Like, I remember taking those trips like into like Boston halls, and I was just like, okay, like it was something there, like for sure. And then it just kind of all stopped. I was just like, all right, enough with this practice, you know. I'm trying to be on all that Nickelodeon.
Oh man. What about you, man? Jonathan?
I feel like for the most part, Ralph kind of dropped the piano. So like I had to like pretty much beg mom to like put me in piano lessons when we moved to Florida. So I don't remember too much about like it was just like an off and on thing. Like they couldn't find me a good teacher. They had too many things going on. The lessons were far. So like, it kind of just like stopped. And then like, I joined the choir. Like I was in choir for like, I still can't sing right now. So I'm not believing that I joined choir, but I was in choir for a long time. I feel like, but I had one recital at a talent show, and like, I was the only black person who applied for the talent show. So even though I could have played the piano like very well, they still put me on. I only knew how to play with like one or two hands. So the music teacher took me to the side and was just like, you know, we're going to practice every day and you're going to get this so you could be on stage. And, you know, I mean, it was good. I mean, I don't even think my parents showed up for it, but.
First of all, don't blame on that, because John was in elementary choir, elementary school choir. I remember this because Spider-Man by Tobey Maguire just came out in theater. Like, and it was the week of my birthday, and they're just like, this was the coolest thing that a kid can go to, is Spider-Man. John has a choir show. in downtown Palm Beach, Kravis Center. This is a nice center, like, you know, for like it is for the arts, like. And I just remember, like, I'm like, why the hell are we going to John's choir thing? Spider-Man is out. Like, everyone's gonna be, and then it was just like the whole, it was a family event. Like, we all went there, just like, yo, your brother is performing on stage tonight. We gotta see him perform. And, you know, admittedly, I'm sitting there, you know, you're a kid, you're like, mad. And at the same time, you're watching this, like, damn, this is a cool ass thing to see. Like, you know, like, they're all, like, a bunch of choirs are singing in a theater, and, like, you see your brother singing up there, and, like, everybody's, like, happy for these kids. So I don't know what the other one they didn't probably go to, because they're probably like, okay, this nigga can't really sing. Like, you know, well, let's just stick to piano. We'll find him a piano teacher soon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I got to college, my voice kind of gave out after everything else. So
that's interesting that you mentioned that there, Ralph, because I kind of have a similar notion growing up too. Because my mom's a vocalist and my brother's a vocalist, and I remember going to his, like, the Chamber Singers and Ambassadors stuff, like high school stuff, like growing up, you know, where like we would go to support, you know, him and his like music groups and stuff, you know. And I wasn't a singer and I knew it, but I was just like, oh, yeah, we can go do this, you know, whatever, you know. But then it's just, you know, eventually it's like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's kind of interesting. But
that's funny. I also feel like they didn't really push us to be singers. It was more like, you know, you're just joining a club and they go there. But like, they were just like, you know, it wasn't like music. It was more like they need some extracurricular activities. They didn't want to stay.
And then we went to, I feel like we went to like one of the best churches musically.
Oh, yeah.
Growing up. Like, yeah. And I was a part of that youth choir.
Oh, yeah.
Choir,
we were part of that choir too. Yeah.
Yeah. That, weren't we a part of that youth choir? Oh, yeah. I was part of that youth choir.
Yeah.
And that, like, it was like, and it was all family worship back in the day. Before it was Winners Church. They changed it to Winners Church, which is okay. Mm. It was kind of weird, but it was like, it was family worship center. It was just like that choir right there. Say what you want, they were probably one of the best that growing up, like,
wow.
They're directed by, like, I think her name was Deborah Shipman or something, like, and it was just like,
but they were on TV, so their choir had to be on point, so we were part of the youth choir.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And Ralph was like, John, you should be singing in the girl section soprano, because my voice was so high. Maybe that's why I don't sing right now. I swear.
Yo, don't put that evil on me, bro.
I distinctly remember that because we're all by the piano and you're just like, his voice is too high. Like, he can't sing. I'm like, all right. And then from there, I just quit the choir.
Bro, get that talk. Yo, I ain't gonna lie. John has many talents. Many talents. Intelligent. You tell John to paint a picture, he can probably give you a portrait, you know? But when it comes to singing, we've had professionals say, all right, like, let's take it easy. Let's relax right now, dog. You can do it. I think he has to believe in himself, dog. And if it was just me that ruined it here on the podcast, I want to say I'm sorry, dog. You can sing. You can sing. Everybody can sing.
I needed that closure, actually. Thank you.
I'm glad I created a platform for that to happen. That's what this is all about. So $1 million question. Wanted to ask you guys, obviously, since, you know, for people that know you guys and know, you know, what you guys have, you know, how you guys have impacted the community. So what's the reason for you guys wanting to, you know, be music studio owners? You know, how did that come about? Why was that a thing you guys wanted to do?
So many stories going around, depending what night you ask, but, I could say, like, when we moved to I moved to LA out here from doing comedy, but I was also like, I stopped playing piano as a kid, but then when I picked up comedy, like, I lived in New York, so I was studying under teachers now. Like, I would get a teacher that was like a real piano, like, that was teaching me blues in New York, and then in Queens, like, I mean, yeah, in Chicago blues, and in New York, he was like teaching me like theory. Little did I know they're teaching me music, like, and I'm just like, I just want to play and do comedy, but they're like, no, this is the theory of music, this is how you play. So, like, I always had that in every city that I moved to, just a piano teacher. So I started learning music theory actually at LACC when I moved out here. I was like, I'll do comedy, but I also want to learn music, like really learn it. So I started doing theory. Then, like on my birthday of 2020, like I was hanging out with a homie that just went to it. He went to studio, I mean, music engineering school, and he set up his microphone at an Airbnb, and we're all fucked up at his house and like, and just start playing music. Like, and then I also had like a friend at the time that was a rapper, and I was just seeing how it was done. I was like, okay, like I see the, but I never was interested in being that art. I was just like, okay, this is cool. And I always freestyle, but I'm not like, I was just like, y'all do that. But then I was like, on my birthday, I was like, this is fucking cool though. Like, just to get fucked up and just express yourself. Like, you just be in there and just like have fun, just a way to outlet. Then I'm telling John that, he's just like, damn, you're saying this? Like, and then I guess in his background, there was, I don't know if you want to say his background, he's like, we should just build a studio. I was just like, what? All right, because we were just getting money from unemployment from, and then so I was just like, all right, let's just do it. Like, and then we did it. That was how it started from there. And then, John, you could tell your origin story too. Just so there's two sides in case there's like two different movies, one on HBO, one on BET. Like,
I will say that like I was always interested in music. Like, I never wanted to stop playing the piano. It was just really circumstances. So like when I was in the 12th grade, I started taking lessons again for the piano. And then my mom brought us a piano. So it was like, you know, really good piano. So from there, like, you know, you go to college, and then I saw there was like talented artists. And like, this is like the, like, you know, I'm going way back, but I guess it was like always deeply rooted in me. Cause you know, in college you change majors, you do this. I called my mom one day, I want to do entertainment business. I want to go to Full Sail. Like, you know, I was on that route. Like, we created a record label in college when I was like 19, 18, it was called Rocket Diamond. So like, you know, I had the engineer.
Oh yeah. Like,
I had Gina. Gina was like the love of my life at the time. You know, if she's seeing this, this it would be funny, but she could sing, and she could sing angelically. I was like, yo, we're gonna make it. And then, you know, in college you go out and like you're not really disciplined, you're 19, you're living on your own, so it kind of like just dwindled out. And then I met Kalia was very into music as well, and she was my ex-girlfriend for the last 5 years. And like during that time, like it was her birthday around the same time Ralph's birthday, it's like a day apart. I got her a laptop because like we would always go on the piano, and we'd always try to learn how to sing because we had a piano in the house. And like, you know, we try to like write lyrics and make music. And she's like, oh, I want a studio. So I'm thinking, you know, she wants a studio. And we were planning on moving to LA. It turns out she just wanted a home studio, you know, something that's very simple. But I turned it to this whole like, you know, vision thing, like, oh, we're gonna build this. And like, you know, not understanding what a woman wants is, you know, very challenging at times, I would say now. But from there, like, you know, I would say like she's part of the inspiration. I called Ralph that day because I've been hearing studio talk at home, and Ralph's talking about he's a musician and like, you know, he loves making songs and stuff. So I was like, all right, let's get it together. So we always had this, like, I'll do the business, Ralph will do the, you know, the artistic work in the studio. And then from there, you know, we built the team up. We had a couple friends, and, you know, we're still building the team up as we go along. So, but this is not my forte at all. Like, you know, I'm still learning, like, you know, remember, Rob, I moved home from college. I was learning Circle of Fifths. I was singing opera all day. Like, I was like so entranced by it. And I'm also studying finance. So like, I'm like, this, the music, it's like so pure. It makes me feel good. So, you know, I learned songs, but.
I'm still living Molly.
Yeah, I mean that could have definitely happened too. But yeah, I mean, I would say that's my backstory. I feel like it was always there, but like I got so caught up into like how Wall Street works and working on Wall Street financial institutions that kind of lost my root until, you know, it became back and like prevalent in my life again. You know what I'm saying? So I think the passion was always there, like for the music. Even to this day, I still feel like I could be ear trained like really well. Like I could hear a song and like play it. Like if I, you know, but that's just me.
Wow. Did you want to comment on that, Ralph?
No, it's funny. because just like it is rooted in this. Like, what I was saying this yesterday to someone, I was just like, I was telling my grandma, I was telling these, because my cousin moved out here, John moved out here. I was just like, I told my grandma, like, as a kid, I was just like, yo, you remember the group Blackstreet? Like, No Diggity?
Yeah.
No Doubt. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Like, that was a heavy single in Boston, like, when we were kids. Like, and I was just like, yo, this is what I want. I want a band with my cousins. We all live in one house and we're making music. Mm-hmm. Like, I just remember sitting in her living room telling her. She was asking us what we wanted. And I was just like, and then fast forward like 20 years, you're like, oh shit, my cousin stays out here, John out here, and we have a studio. And it's just like, you never know what you're throwing out in the air, you know, like you're just saying it as a kid. Because yeah. it's like pure, this unfiltered. Like, you know, you're just like, this is what's going to happen. Like, you know, like, and everyone laughs because we're like, oh, it's a kid's imagination. And then you're like, wow, this really what happened, low key. And it's still happening.
Yeah. I find it really interesting as far as hearing both of your guys' stories and noticing how there's this powerful like ambition with both of you guys, like with Jonathan, like him, like how to put it together from like a financial basis, and then we're all putting it here from like a creative basis, and just like all these things coming together. But because like I feel like a lot of people, they have ambitions to do something, but then the ABCs of doing it, it's like, that's where it falls off. You know what I mean? So just like hearing your guys' story of like, no, like, I think we should do this. Yeah, let's do this. And then, you know, lo and behold, this is where you guys are today. I just find that really interesting. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I try to do everything. So,
and that's the thing. It's just a balance. I feel like John is great. Like his girl wanted a home studio. He'll build a whole building. So sometimes I'd be like, yo, let's calm it down. Like, you know, like this is what we could do for right now in the circumstances. Everyone can, you know what I mean? Like, I'm learning a lot. Like, business and art is just like disgusting. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just like a disgusting thing to even be around. I'm hearing like all these things that just like, it could easily kill creativity for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, it could, like, and I understand why now you, like, on a minuscule scale, I understand when people are like, fuck music, I don't want to do this shit no more. Like, when you hear artists say that shit, it's because it's, like, the business side.
Yeah.
You're killing the creativity. And it's just, like, you'll hear it. And that's the difference between John and I, which is, like, great, because he's so business-minded. But he understands the artist mind, but he's so in that business world. He just, like, artists, I heard an artist talk to him the other day. He's like, I understand what you're telling me, John. But if I do this, it's going to kill my creativity. And, you know, like, it's just like, I was like, damn, John sounds like he's the label right now to these kids. Like, out here, these
I
kids.
Have no money for you. Figure it out.
I mean, I think that way because it's like most artists want to get their music heard, but then they also, you know, 90% of them, they work jobs they don't want to work. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you got to be able to capitalize off your music as well as make the music that you want to make. So it's like a two-part, you know, series. I mean, it's a two-part business to me. Like, the creativity will always be there. Like, you know, there's always someone that's worse than you that has everything, and there's someone that's better than you that has nothing. So it's like, I see a lot of talent that goes through Knockhouse. I've met a lot of talented people, and I'm just like, all right, let's make some music. Let's get out there. Let's go sell it. Like, because that's all the exec at any label that's going to give you a deal, that's what they're doing. They're going to sit there. They don't know how to make any music, and they're going to listen to it, and they're going to be like, yeah, this one's going to be viral. This one's not. Like, and they're literally controlling your life. So I want to be able to give the artist back their life and be like, hey, listen, you could do it without the exec, without the label. But I mean, obviously if we have a label, it's different because I'll be selling it.
Stop it right there.
But at the same time,
stop, like, Steve Stout. He sounds like a Steve Stout, if you know the Steve Stout. Sounds like a Leo Cohen.
He works
like,
for United Masters. I'm giving the artist
freedom to come work for my label. I'm just giving them freedom to work for me.
No, I mean, you know, I feel like it starts with ideas. Like, you know, like I'm on this I don't know if we have more of a script, if I could just keep talking about this.
No, go ahead. We're still in line. Yeah,
like, please. I feel like these ideas is like everybody wants to get syncs and placements, but you have to get commercials, right? So there's only one person that has a budget for commercial, and it's a business. Yeah, so you got to be able to market yourself to a business saying like, hey, I could make music for your commercials and I'll make you a commercial to prove it to you. And they'll put it on a national level. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? And like the music is synced, they'll drop you a check, whatever the case may be. But like there's so many businesses here in LA that like they need marketing. And that's kind of like what music is now, is just a marketing tool. And like, you know, obviously you'll have some people that really enjoy and deep dive into music, but like all these companies are using it for commercials and sponsorships. And, you know, so the label, like, you're not even getting paid off the label anymore. You're getting paid off of these businesses that just need your music to continue promoting their product. Right. So it's like, all right, I'll have a product for them to use. And, you know, and hopefully that will, like, you know, more artists are able to see that it's like, okay, this is how you are able to get placements. Yeah. Like, that's not only talking to labels or trying to get us engaged. It's like, hey, go to the local business down the street. You know, Donut Place, he has probably like 60,000 followers on Instagram. Like, make a reel for him. Put your music behind it. You'll have 6,000 people look at it. And then if they like it, you might have 100 people that like your song, and they go and they download it. Then you, and you know, you could keep doing that until, you know, you get as many listeners as you can, and it grows organically. But like, and they might like your commercials, and they pay you to do their commercials and make the jingles in there. So
yeah,
that's how I'm looking at it. Cause I'm just like, there gotta be a better way than every artist coming to me or saying like, I want to be signed, or I'm looking for a deal, or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting too, because, you know, I'm sure you guys probably heard, as far as like for a certain artist, and just how powerful TikTok has, like, mm-hmm. has you know, just kind of not necessarily shaped, but just influenced like the labels and whatnot too, like how mm-hmm. How Halsey, like, she couldn't release her single without putting something viral on TikTok, and she's like, I've sold like 100 million albums, like, what the fuck, you know? And then she like ended up doing like her own TikTok, kind of showing like, I don't want to do this, but my label is making me, you know, before like she had to release her next single. I'm just like, wow, like, it's just, it's interesting how, before I go to the next segment, but just like, it's interesting how like artificial music is becoming. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's
just, was doing a dance on TikTok. And then his album gets delayed because it wasn't viral enough. Mm. He has to shoot somebody. You know what I mean? Mm. Like,
TikTok, I mean, I feel like the labels are coming up. The label, because they know that, like I'm saying, for those reels on Instagram or whatever the case may be, it's going to get a lot of people looking at it, and it's going to get a lot of streams instantly that way, like just doing the song. And like, they're looking at it from that perspective. And it sucks because they're releasing music that's like very heartfelt and very like dear to them, and it's like their project, their passion, and it's like it's being controlled by how someone can sell it. So I'm just like, go out there and sell it yourself, like, you know. And if you're able to sell it, you're able to place a song in a donut commercial or a reel or whatever, then you could place your song in a Burger King commercial, like, you know. You could go to HBO and be on TV. like, I got to be able to make that, you know, adjustment. It's starting small, but like, you know, you're an artist, so we start small.
Yeah I remember I think it was Chloe from Chloe and Haley. She was interviewed by somebody or whatever. I was watching the video on Twitter, and she was saying how, you know, music is just a billboard. Like, there's like, you know, it's just leading towards something to make money. Like, as far as this monetary basis, like, the music doesn't really make anything. It's really about it connecting to live performances or other stuff like that. And I mean, she was giving some game up. I was like, damn. I was like, she not signed? Like, I was like, she's giving some game up right now, you know. But I just thought it was really interesting, just the idea of music is just a billboard.
That's, I mean, it really is. But I mean, you get into, like, that's why it's like the music business is ugly. Like, if you go down to like who supports the Billboard charts and who's behind that, it's all connected to one person that's influenced. You're just like, what? Labels have to pay for this so the chart can go up so they can get a bigger raise in promotion. Boom. So like, once you know that, and like, okay, well, once you know that, you're okay. That it's all bullshit, right? So it's just like, as an artist, you let the business be business, and then you just got to be creative. You know what I mean? Like, can this be performed live? Like, I don't know. I feel like, this is me getting older, Jarrell. I think it's like, I feel like hip hop is not as profitable as you think it is. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's not, it's like, it's in a way, like you can only perform it one way. And so to speak, unless you're like a Kendrick Lamar, you know, like where you could take it and put it in an art form and you can actually tell the story in a broader sense that you can hear this in a play or you can see this, like, you know, like, but as far as like how the music is being produced, where there's like three producers on one hip hop beat and there's like 7 to 8 writers, like on, yeah, you know, just like, and it's a different ball game. I don't think it's as profitable as far as like, I feel like people like you're like rock and like those like punk rock. That's why that's heavy. Like that's selling out festivals because it's just like those things are like people are feeling that more now. Like, you know, like it's just like another, I don't know. I just like being in the music studio, like just made me realize what music was, like a different appreciation for everything. Yeah. Different appreciation of the level of people that take the time to actually create the music with instruments instead of a computer. Maybe I'm like old school. I'm like, yo, we are just so privileged because we live in a digital age that everyone could just make music. You know, yeah, like if we were working on tape, like if we actually had tape and we saw an artist walk in and they were like fucked up, we're like, we know we can't record anything tonight. They're fucked up. Like they're going to waste our tape. Like, you know, I think like the, you know, like we can't, and just to cut it, just to, we're not doing that. Like, come back when you're a little bit better. But in a digital age, an artist can come there fucked up, we'd be like, just record. We could just delete and keep what we, and it's just like, it makes it more affordable. Like, so the, I don't know. I feel like if you're doing it as an artist right now, you gotta love it.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta love it. Like, despite if you're making money or not, like, I feel like it's not even about the money, it's about performing now. Like, it really is, like, we're in the age of, like, a performing and expressive.
Right.
Like, yeah, we need the money, yeah, sure, like, that comes with it. But, like, all the great artists that we had, like, I think they just didn't give a fuck about any of that. Like, I could see Prince not even going to a corporate America office and just, like, working on that music. Like, you know, just, like, you know, like, it was just, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a different ballgame in how that we just, everyone could just do music in their living room.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it changes the game. What are your thoughts on that, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, the game is always changing. Like, no, nothing ever stays the same. It was easier back then than it was now. I feel like it's just so saturated. Everybody, like you said, has equipment. But I also feel like not all music is good music, you know? Like, here today, gone tomorrow kind of thing. So it's like only the classics are going to stay. Only what people think are popular is going to stay. And you kind of pick your genre, what you like. At one point, I was super hip hop. You know, like everything I listened to was hip hop. 106 in Park, basement freestyles. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then like making the band, like all like hip hop. But now I'm like, oh, I like this EDM. I like this jazz. Like, you know, you start to like venture out. And I think a lot of people, like when they get to the age of maybe like 19, 20, 23, 24, they start venturing out to like different sounds and different things that they like, which could bring back, you know, the live instruments that you have. I mean, it's very rare to see. I mean, I know there's a lot of bands, but it's very rare to see, you know, a whole black band again, you know, and that's
special.
Like,
it's special to see that.
Yeah. So I'm just like, when I'm seeing you guys in the studio and like you guys are making music, chopping it up, jamming, I'm just like, oh, this is the funk. This is the soul. Like, yeah, it brings back joy. That's why everybody loved the jam sessions, because it was like, it was bringing back something that we haven't seen. Like, and there's a lot of black artists and there's a lot of, you know, black musicians and things like that. But it's just to see it live, it's like, I haven't experienced that too much in our generation, because we used to, you know, we listen to the songs now, like Earth, Wind & Fire, when they had the live band performance. Or when like the Jackson 5, when they had the live band performances and like everything in the 70s. And like now it's like very rare to see, you know, like I would say a black singer being highlighted or a black band being highlighted.
Like, if it's not the Roots, right?
And they're
great live, by the way. I saw them once. A great live band. You're right. Mm-hmm. Your big point.
But if you're talking about something that came out in the 90s, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, what's the next? You guys are the next thing, in my opinion.
Well, it's funny. I think of like, you know, like D'Angelo's projects and, you know, like Black Messiah and like that. Mm-hmm. That's the last album that came out, which was like phenomenal. I have an idea for a project, but we can talk about it off air. But you mentioned the jams, and I wanted to connect that to my next question. Did you guys know like how impactful your guys' studio would become? Because I feel like it's not just a studio where people can just book and, you know, do their thing. Like you guys have kind of created a community. I mean, whether in non-intentionally or intentionally, kind of create a community of musicians where they feel safe to kind of like go and create in a place that is comfortable to them. Like I remember, you know, our friend, you know, friend Brian, he invited me to your guys' Knockhouse, you know, thing, you know, jam sessions. And that's how I connected with a lot of artists that made my Transitions 2 album, you know, which I have you guys to thank for that, you know, for having that space. But did you guys know that you guys would have that type of impact amongst like a community when it comes to just music in your guys' studio?
Honestly, I didn't think it would be like that. I really didn't. I knew it was going to bring a crowd. You know, I knew it was going to generate traction. I knew it was going to, like, you know, build up, like, you know, our name, like Knockhouse. But like, as far as like the love that and support that we get from the community, that that's kind of different. And that it was a different feeling. And then that's why I was just like, oh, then I got to help them more. And like, you know, like we wanted to do it every week if we could, you know, just to get people in there and like creating something. And, you know, at first I was like, maybe it could be structured, but then I was like, no, it can't, because people just want to be free. So, you know, I was like, all right, let them play. Let them boys play.
Yeah. What were your thoughts, Ralph?
I mean, I think it just came organically. That's why I didn't think it was going to be impactful like that. I thought it was just a group of people that were just going to have fun. Because it just started with, we went to a jazz night, or I was told about a jazz night at Hotel Sofitel. And I went there, I saw the jazz players. I was like, this is really nice. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is. And then I brought my homegirl to go sing the next week. Like, I was just like, let's go sing. Then I was just starting saying hi to the horn players, and I was like, oh, well, we have a studio. And then, yeah, I don't even know like how it started. Like, yeah, we have a studio, should come. And I think they took it serious. And then I told John that it was just like, all right, we set up for Wednesday. And just like off that first week, like in January, it was like in January. I think that it was happening in January too. So like just off that first week, I wasn't even smoking at that time. Like, you know, I was like off that. I was off weed and just like, and I was like, oh, I'm high as hell. Like at home, just like, what the fuck? Just after the first one, I was like, it's something different, bro. It's different, bro. Like, I'm just like, bro, like I'm really living in it and just feeling like this really felt good. Okay, let's do this shit next week then. Like, you know, cause it was just like people jamming and singing and releasing and just like, and I think that's what makes it impactful, is just like how people feel when they get in that room of or in the studio, just like I'm able to be free. I don't even have to sing on the microphone. I can sit on this couch and just watch it and just feel like I'm a part of it. And just like the connections people are meeting, like, oh, you do this, I'm from what? Like, we're not telling people, hey, like, you know, you should meet this person, you should work with this person, hey, you like, and we were getting kind of like that controversy, like, oh, it should be more structured. It should be like, hey, we should pick a song and stuff. And maybe it can work like that. But I feel like the flow energy of people walking in and out, like it's a sitcom show. You never know who's going to come in. Oh, y'all singing this song? Oh, let me hop on. And it's just like, it flows like that. And the musicians that are there are happy to play because they don't have a place where they can just, because most of the jazz musicians are just playing jazz all day. They're just like, yo, let me play some notes. Like, y'all can sing this. And the singers come out and sing. And you're like, oh, man, they can really sing. And, you know, the ones that blow you away, you're like, oh, damn. Like, you know, so, like, each week you don't know what was going to happen. So, and then, you know, it was just like, yo, it was like, I don't know, it's an incredible feeling that it has. I don't know, like, for me personally, I know for John and just the community, and of course, like, yeah, just the music, man. The music is fire, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the music is fire. Like, those musicians that are slapping the bass, the musicians that are set up, they're sweating in there. Yeah. They don't want to come out because they're just like, oh, okay, let's go again. Because I don't know when I could jam like this ever again this week or this month. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, yeah. I mean, after I did realize it did become an impactful thing because, you know, like, because you had to stop after a while, like, you know, like, because of different events and circumstances. But it's just like when people are like, oh, y'all having that jam session this week? Oh, it's not this week, it's next week? Damn, all right. Like, I'm just like, oh, shit, y'all really love this shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, y'all got any more of that jam session, nigga? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's really what it's a beautiful thing, man. It really is like a very, like, okay, this is better than making a hit song to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's because it's just like, these stories go on, you know, like, hit songs, I guess they go on too, like, all the creation of this hit song, this person, where, but it's just like, yo, remember when we met at this place that everybody was there? Like, I was just like, oh, I can see these in documentaries, like, when people are just like, oh, yeah, it was at Knockhouse, and that shit, like, oh, Knockhouse, where is that? That will probably happen, you know, like, just on just the amount of people that just circulated or met through that, just even one time, even if they came in. Some people's first stop in L.A. was Knockhouse Jam Session. Oh, like, wow. They were like, oh, I just came from the airport from New York, man. My friend said to come through. This is incredible. And everyone's just saying this shit. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. You know what made it really special, at least for me? There's so many layers, right? There's so many layers of, like, that makes those sessions really special. Like, for me, like, as a guitar player, I'm very much like an improv person where, like, let's make something from scratch, because that's how I learned to play guitar, as far as from my, you know, we play in garages or whatever. We just make something completely off from scratch. We didn't really care to make covers, to do covers. So making something from nothing to just this crazy, like, song that didn't even, like, you know, like, where did it come from, you know, with a bunch of people that I don't know, was really special, you know. And then also the other layer of it is, you get to see, like, where you're at as a musician as well. So you see how these other people perform. You see how they're picking different things up. Okay, you know, I do this a little better than that person, but this person does this a lot better than I do. So now I have something to take home to learn. You know, I remember seeing one guy in particular where I kind of felt a little bit, because I feel like he was a little slightly out of his league with the people that he was performing around. But that was also kind of like a big learning lesson too, because it's like, okay, like, I know what I need to work on. Like, I feel like that's one of, like, the biggest gifts when you know what you need to work on. Because I feel like there's so many people that won't tell you that. You know what I mean? That won't tell you this is what you need. This is what you need to do, you know, and having a space where, one, you can have fun, two, you can learn from other people, and three, you can create something really awesome. I mean, it's just, it's something that you don't really see often, at least for me, when I've been in LA, you know, and been exposed to everything's in LA, but I'm like, oh, you guys have created something that's really special here. So, you know, so yeah, that's kind of my perspective on that.
All I saw was Motown, honestly. I was like, This is the next best thing.
I mean, when you guys would jam out, man, that shit would be like inspiring words that you didn't even know you had in the soul, you know? Like, we were just like,
remember
you
know, John, apple pie? The mama's apple pie?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we made some, like, hits that nobody will probably hear. But for the moment, for that jam session, that's what I kind of makes it special. Like, I'm a trapper, like, we made songs, like, I'm just really, like, you know, like, and John being, like, so business, and now it's, like, makes me smile to see him on the microphone, because it's, like, why not have a studio? Fuck all the business, like, this is the fun of having a studio, you know, like, just getting to express yourself, and, like, really, like, and now he has a song that he's shopping out, it's half done, that he's shopping out, like, I should have known. Like, he's shopping out. Every time John goes to the studio now, he's like, you'll know he's at the studio because he's playing this half-done song. You know, like, he's just like, hey, I got a song, everybody. and it's really good, and it is really good. It's just never done. Like, you know, like, so if anybody out here listening to the podcast, link up with John.
It's coming out soon. Should have known. Yeah.
Cool.
Make me sound like Chris Brown, so.
Oh, shit.
The thing is, it sounds too smooth. Musicians, you know it as auto-tune. It's too smooth, like polished diamond. Like, that shit can't be real. I need the rugged edges, you know?
Right, yeah. Like, where are the imperfections?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like that. Yeah. You hear this gruffy voice John talks about. He sounds like John Draper, like Don Draper from Batman. Like, yeah. And another thing. And then you hear him on the voice, and he sounds like an angel. Like, you're like, what the fuck?
Love it.
Oh, man. I had a question for you, Ralph, as far as for just, you know, the Sour Jack. You know, your artist name Sour Jack. I was going to ask you just as far as, like, generally, like, you know, what's the origin of Sour Jack, and what does that mean to you? What does the music mean to you as far as for the music that's Sour Jack?
Well, Sour Jack came from just being in the studio. It was birthed really at Knock House. I was smoking a strand called like Sour Jack. I was like, that's kind of sound like a Sour Jack. And then I had a homie said, that's hard. That's a hard artist name. I was like, yeah, it is. And I was just like, you know what? This was this Sour Jack. But it was, as far as Sour Jack music, it was, I think it was Ollie. I feel like there's Ralph the comedian, like, you know, like, and then there's always different sides of, like, you have three podcasts, you know, you're like the gamer, and then you're the musician, and then, you know, like, you have these roles that you gotta, like, separate. Yeah. And I kind of seen it clearly with like separating Ralph and then Sour Jack. Like, you know, there's like a Sour Jack mode that I like. Me having these shades on is probably like Sour Jack mode ish. Like, you know, like, you know, just it's an attitude towards it. I feel like there's more, Sour Jack is more like in your face, direct attitude, which is me too, but it's like more like I don't care how you feel, but I am very vulnerable in my feelings, you know, like that's how, and I think that's how it is in the music. Like, like Phony was like first birth, like the first song we did was like Phony, and that was like fueled by like whiskey and cigarettes and anger and heartbreak and shit, like turmoil. And then it came out, and like at first you just want to hear the song. Like, I literally wrote the first song I ever had just to get like, just see, like, so she could hear it. Like, the person that hurt me is just like, I want you to hear it, and I want you to hear it before Thanksgiving. And, you know, like, that was
before
like
before Thanksgiving. As you're eating your fucking peach cobbler. Listen to this.
I don't want you to smile around your family. I want you to just, yeah.
Eat them greens. Oh, man.
So. So yeah, there was, and it just became, it was natural. Like, you know, our mutual friend Brian, like, he played something, and I was just like going off, and it was very simple, very like, then I played it for a couple people, and they were like digging it. Then, you know, you play for John, he's like, oh, this is good. I was like, oh, okay. You know, John Corporate John can get it. I was like, all right,
get
cool.
That stamp. So, yeah, you know,
get that stamp from corporate. Then I was like, all right. Then I just dropped it, like the song, and then just the reception I got, it just like, it taught me a lot. Like, cause there was no like marketing plan. There was no strategy. There was no like, oh, I gotta, like, my shit was spited out of just like, I want this girl to hear it. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and just like, I want to make sure, like, so when I dropped it, I'm blessed with the cover art and just like doing like things organically. I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. Like, oh, being an artist is even cooler than I thought. It wasn't rap music. It was like really like a bluesy. Mm-hmm. So I was like off rip. Like, people are listening. I realized, oh, we're going to most likely listen to that than if I drop the rap song. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. This is cool. Like, let me keep going on this route of like so bluesy. So I feel like at that time there was like, Sour Jack then was birthed into that situation. Cool. And then but still finding the voice of like who Sour Jack is. But then I was like writing tunes. I feel like God opened like a vessel of like that's why, like, creativity, it, as much as it's always going to be there, it comes in, like, ebbs and flows of just, like, when it depends how connected you are to God, like, or just hands how open, how, you know, because if you just, like, wrote a song and you just, like, oh, it's a hit, and then you just stop doing whatever you did to get that creativity zone, like,
yeah.
I feel like it's just closed off, like, you know, like, that's why once you become a big star, like, you get other writers because they're still hungry, so they're still, like, are connected, like, a little bit more than, but, So I just started writing more, like, and, like, five songs that I was just, like, oh, different, like, it was, like, different feeling came out, like, and just, like, Goddamn Fool came out, but they were coming out organically, and then I just remember writing a song for, like, a girl that she was telling me a story. And it wasn't even about me, but I just, like, wrote it. And then I, like, gave it to her. Just that she's like, oh, my God, you're in my head. And I was just like, oh, okay. I kind of, like, can song write. And I can song. Like, and I remember, like, a homie. Nah, he's not a homie anymore. Like, or, like, but he just called me one day. He's like, oh, you're a threat, bro. Like, I was just like, what do you mean? Like, he's just like, you can write. You can sing. Like, and I was just like, you can do. I was just like, okay. Like, but I really was just like, in that zone of, like, I'm Sour Jack. Like, this is what, I'm an artist. I can really do this. I could drop a project and just, like, really brrr. But I think it's just, like, also, at the same time, as soon as that vessel closed, there's a time where the vessel just closes. It's like, all right, there you go. He closed. Like, you know, and you're just like, damn, like, I can't write for shit right now. Or, like, you can hear a melody and you can't hear anything. You just hear the melody. You're like, damn, I am not. And so it always reminds me to stay connected to God for sure. Like, but like Sour Jack really just like, is just an attitude of just like, yo, I can be vulnerable in my feelings. And I know all y'all are feeling this too. Mm. We all felt like love. We all feel like we need a scream sometimes, like on a track, you know, like just like, so I'm doing it. I don't know if I'm doing it right. There's no rules. Cause it's not like I knew how to be an artist. Somebody like I grew up around musician artists. Like, nah, I just feel like, okay, I think I could do this.
Nice. Nice. It's funny. I was thinking of this term and I wanted to ask you guys, cause you know, you have the term like what came first, the chicken or the egg, but there's also a term of what came first, the art or the oppression.
Or the oppression. Yeah. Always the oppression, man. Mm. Always the oppression. Mm. Always. Mm. Always, man. I feel
the oppression, and that came first for sure. But that's where you get good music, right? You get good art, like, you know. But there's something that's, you know, eating you inside that makes you a great artist. Like, all you guys are great artists, but there's something that's just like that drive and that oppression that's keeping you going. Because at the end of the day, you could have just had one song route and just been like, all right, I'm done. You know, but you're always feeling something. You're always oppressed in some areas. So that's what we need to see corporately.
Just like in comedy, if everything's going right in your life, you are not funny. You just like, damn, I'm just too. I think that's why I feel like in life, I'm just like, I always find myself in constant humble positions where I don't feel sorry for myself. Like, all right, I have to be in here so I can be funny or I can perform better. Like, there's always lessons in humbleness. Like, you know, like, it's oppression is the realest thing. That's why black people are the realest in like the music, you know, like, so when we find a white guy that's so good at music, you're like, how the fuck, where are you from, nigga, where are you from, where are
your family? I took it from you. I took the music from you. Elvis.
In theater soon.
No, I agree. I think so too. It's just, I mean, I feel like blues, jazz are just some of the most prominent examples as far as like how much pain came from that music. You know what I mean? Even just from call and response and singing before instruments came to pass, you know what I mean? That being transcended, you know, it's just like, it's the reason why, like, even like learning any instrument or whatever, when you, like learning the blues, it's like one of the first things that you would learn because you're able to witness emotion coming out of an instrument, you know what I mean?
Immediately, because classical you can, but it takes time. But like blues, you just like you hear it immediately, you know? Like, but it's just like it's not our responsibility only as black people to show our art through oppression. I feel like I think like now we're at an age where we can just show anything. Like, you know, we're allowed to be goofy in comedy and not just have oppression type jokes, you know?
Right.
But yeah.
I agree. No, I definitely agree. Definitely agree. One of the last things I wanted to ask you guys, you know, I feel like it would be wrong for me not to ask. So my question is, as far as for, you know, say if there's someone listening to this or watching this, and they are aspiring to be entrepreneurs, to own a business. And since you guys are doing it, what advice would you give someone that's trying to, you know, become an entrepreneur or to own a business? And, you know, maybe they're a little worried and not sure what to do or how to approach it. What would be some advice that you would give?
I'll answer first because my answer will be shorter than John's, for sure. Like, for sure.
How much time do we got?
For sure, my answer would be strong. As an artist that wants to be an entrepreneur, make sure you just team up with someone that just knows business. Like, you know, like off rip. No, you don't know everything. No, you can't do everything. You have to have a team. And don't stretch yourself too thin. Don't expand. Stay in a foundation, a strong foundation. Like, of just, like, what I want in this, who I am in this, you know, like, despite, don't be influenced by, like, oh, they're doing this, we should do this, you know, or doing this, we should do this. Oh, I see someone, let that be, like, don't let that be the foundation of how you move in your business. Love what you're doing, like, and if you really got to love it, because sometimes when it's ugly, like, you really, some people want to up and leave, like, yeah. You know, like, I've only been in the business world for 2 years and I grew more gray hair than I ever had in my life. Like, you know, like just by seeing like people's egos not wanting to get checked, you know, like an artist is all about egos. Like, you gotta realize you gotta let that shit go. Yeah. It's all like a beautiful thing. Like, you know, like, but in entrepreneurship, I understand there's sharks in this game and how you move and everything is chess. So if you're an artist and you're sensitive about your shit, team up with a shark. You know what I mean? Like, team up with someone that's going to actually go to war and believe in what you do. And like, and when you team up with them and they their actions match up with their words, then you have a beautiful thing going on. That's what I would say. That's my short answer.
Okay. Great. No, great advice. Well, what would you say, Jonathan?
Entrepreneurship is not for the weak hearted. I'll tell you that. You have to have strong ambition every day. When you wake up, you're constantly thinking about it. Like, our parents or our grandparents and our parents were entrepreneurs. Like, you know, like, my mom had a pharmacy. My grandpa had, I don't know if it was a grocery store. My other grandpa sold land and did real estate. So, like, you know, and they were doing it to feed the family and to leave a generation behind. So, like, you got to be able to remember why you're doing this for. So that's one of the toughest decisions you make, because some days you'd be like, you know, like, damn, like, I don't want to do this. And then there's some days where it's like, I'm on a roll. There's nobody going to stop me. Like, I'm going to go through every wall that's going to be in my face right now. And, like, there's more days like that than there is days that you know, you feel down. But I will say, like, you know, making sure that you have the correct team on both sides, creative team and the business structure team, people that understand, like, you know, how they're going to do strategy. Strategy is like number one thing in music, is strategizing and trying to get streams, trying to get plays, trying to get content. It's all part of a strategy game. So having a concrete plan with the right team, you could execute pretty much anything, you know, because the universe is going to give it to you. So it's a matter of just making sure that you're prepared to get it.
So, nice. Very nice.
I could talk longer, but I know we only got like 2 minutes left. So
no worries. No, that was what you said was a great way to end the episode. But first of all, Ralph and Jonathan, I wanted to thank you guys for coming on the show. This is really valuable, and you know, and congrats to all your guys's, you know, success, you know, on Knockout Studios. So
congrats to your success too, man. Dropped an album.
Yeah. Consistently dropping music.
Oh, thank you.
Consistently dropping podcasts. I don't know where you find the time. We have the same 24 hours. You got an extra 8? What the fuck, bro?
I mean, I would just swear you're single, but man's a married man.
He's a married man. He's a married man doing us.
Well, it's funny. You guys know Toby Enigwe? He said something on Instagram in an interview that resonated with me. He said, die empty. He said, try to get everything out that you want to do so you don't regret it. You know what I mean? So to me, like in my brain, I'm like, I want to leave a legacy. Like either one day, like me and my wife are going to eat from this, or I can leave a legacy for, you know, my friends that knew me, or whoever, my family that knew me, that they can see a catalog of like, okay, this is Jarrell. You know what I mean? It's not just Jarrell the podcast, yeah. Jarrell the musician, just Jarrell the rapper, just Jarrell the actor, just Jarrell this, you know, like, so that's kind of my brain. I don't know how I'm getting away with it, but if I'm still breathing, by the grace of God, I'm going to keep pushing content, you know, until the wheels fall off. So that's kind of my
brain. Let's go. Hell yeah. We're all that. We're feeding off that energy for real.
Appreciate it.
I mean, it's definitely been a pleasure being on the first podcast. And now I know how it is.
Yay.
Hey, cool, man.
I'll have my script next time.
Well, there you have it, folks. This is Jarrell here on the 440 Guitar Podcast. We'll jam again soon, and have a good day.